It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A car bomb blast ripped through the main square of Turkey's capital Ankara Sunday, killing at least 34, wounding dozens more. It is the second such attack in less than a month and comes 2 days after the U.S. Embassy issued a security warning asking civilians to stay clear of the area. There's been no immediate claim of responsibility, but suspicion has fallen on the outlawed Kurdish Workers' Party, or PKK, and the Kurdistan Freedom Hawks, or TAK, which have been fighting a 30-year insurgency for greater autonomy. Greg Barton is a terror expert at Deakin University in Australia.
The government is probably of a mind to say this is linked to PKK, TAK as well. In some ways, that would be convenient for them because in many respects, ISIS is an even less predictable enemy and more likely to operate in other cities without any great capacity for being controlled.
A car bomb attack February 17 claimed by Kurdish separatists killed at least 29. Turkey was the target of a suicide bombing by Islamic State in October that killed more than 100. Al-Qaeda's North African affiliate has claimed responsibility by 6 heavily armed assailants on the Ivory Coast beach resort of Grand Bassam that killed 14 civilians and 2 soldiers. 22 were wounded.
The forces special ivoiriennes sont intervenues.
President Alassane Ouattara said security forces responded quickly and all the attackers were killed. The Ivorian leader expressed his condolences to the families of the victims. The United States has condemned the heinous attack and praised Ivorian and French forces for preventing more from dying. A National Security Council spokesman said the U.S. is prepared to assist Ivory Coast in its investigation and repeated a U.S. pledge to West Africa to fight terrorism. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry Sunday accused Syria of clearly trying to disrupt the U.N.-sponsored peace talks aimed at ending the bloody 5-year civil war by demanding that there be no discussion of removal of President Bashar al-Assad from power. Foreign Minister Walid Mualim warned negotiators that any talk about the fate of Syria's president is off the table. Mohamed Alouche, chief negotiator for Syria's main opposition group, said the president has to go. Secretary of State Kerry.
Iran and Russia have both adopted at the United Nations, in support of it at the United Nations, and in the Vienna communiques and the Munich meetings, an approach which dictates that there must be a political transition and that we must move towards a presidential election at some point in time.
The top U.S. diplomat said violence in the war-wracked country has been hugely reduced since a cessation of hostilities was declared 2 weeks ago, but said the single biggest violator of the truce has been the Assad regime. A nationalist anti-immigrant party won seats in 3 German regional elections, a result seen as a major setback to Chancellor Angela Merkel's open immigration policy. The 3-year-old Alternative for Deutschland party, or AfD, won representation in the states of Baden-Württemberg, Rhineland-Palatinate, and in Saxony-Anhalt. Hundreds of thousands of Moroccans demonstrated in Rabat Sunday against UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's recent criticism of the country's occupation of the former Spanish territory of Western Sahara, which the country annexed in 1975. Mr. Ban's remark came after visiting a refugee camp in southern Algeria. He earlier said he would restart stalled peace talks. Waving portraits of King Mohammed and Moroccan flags, the demonstrators chanted, "The Sahara is ours." Abdallah Bakali, General Secretary of the Moroccan Union of Journalists, said the protesters were sending a message. They're not ready to give up territorial unity. The Rabat government has accused the UN of no longer being neutral in the dispute with the Polisario Front, which fought Morocco until a ceasefire brokered by the UN in 1991. Libya's UN-mediated presidential council says it's preparing to assume power in the North African country as it seeks a transition from years of political division and armed conflict. The council has nominated a unity government, but it hasn't yet been approved by the internationally recognized Eastern Administration Parliament. It's also unclear whether the unity government can move to Tripoli, where security remains in question. An insurgent group fighting alongside Afghanistan's Taliban says it's ready to join political reconciliation talks. The Hezbi Islami faction, led by warlord Gulbuddin Yar, said it's accepted the government's offer, prepared to participate in the talks. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, March 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. An Al-Qaeda affiliate has claimed responsibility for Sunday's attack that killed 16 people in Ivory Coast.
Around midday local time on Sunday, six gunmen stormed a hotel and a nearby beach here in the seaside town of Gambassam, Ivory Coast, about 50 kilometers from the economic capital, Abidjan.
That's VOA reporter Emily Yop in Abidjan. An Africa expert says the Ivory Coast attack should be viewed as a threat not just to Africa, but to the international community as a whole. And Cameroon says its hospitals on the northern border with Nigeria are overwhelmed by Boko Haram victims.
So all these people, families, women, children, have been hiding so long in the bush, eating nothing and drinking dirty water. So they arrive in Cameroon in very, very bad situation.
Hannah Lecantre is a volunteer with the Cameroon Medical Council. Residents of Yambia, South Sudan, are concerned about arbitrary arrests and disappearances of their youth. And an African-American History Museum prepares to open in Washington, D.C. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A deadly terrorist attack in Ivory Coast on Sunday left at least 16 people dead, according to the Ivorian government. The Islamist organizational Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claimed to be behind the attack. Emily Yop reports from Gambassam, Ivory Coast.
Around midday local time on Sunday, six gunmen stormed a hotel and a nearby beach here in the seaside town of Gambassam, Ivory Coast, about 50 kilometers from the economic capital, Abidjan. Witness Jean-Baptiste Beugré works at a hotel next to where the shooting took place. He says he saw one of the gunmen arrive.
On a entendu des coups de feu. Bon, nous, on s'est dit que c'est des pétards. Donc, on s'est approché un peu pour voir qu'est-ce qui s'est passé. C'est au même moment qu'on a aperçu qu'il y avait un monsieur qui était en civil.
They heard gunshots, he says, and first thought it was firecrackers. When they got closer to see what was happening, they saw a man wearing fatigues, a flak jacket, and carrying an AK-47. He shouted down and then started to shoot at people, children, women, everybody. Witnesses said the gunmen looked very young and were heavily armed.
When he arrived, he found the young people who were there. He said, no, who is there? There is one who said, I'm going to do Kouvalou.
Survivor Master Gaye describes how one of the terrorists asked one man if he was praying. He said yes and survived. Then the terrorist asked the man next to him. He said he didn't pray and the gunman shot him dead. The Islamic group Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb claimed responsibility in a statement on a jihadist website monitored by the site intelligence group. It is the such deadly attack in the past few months in West Africa. In November, gunmen stormed a hotel in Bamako in neighboring Mali, and in January, armed men stormed a hotel and a restaurant in Burkina Faso. The same Al-Qaeda group claimed responsibility for those attacks as well. Ivorian authorities has increased security around the hotel and all around Abidjan, as it was feared that Ivory Coast could be the next target. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara visited the shooting site later Sunday afternoon.
Je voudrais avant toute chose dire que ces attaques lâches des terroristes ne seront pas tolérées en Côte d'Ivoire. Je voudrais dire à tous nos concitoyens,
à toute la population, que cette terroriste attaque ne sera pas tolérée en Ivory Coast. He also says the situation is now under control and calm has been restored. Ouattara said the six terrorists were killed. The death toll is 14 civilians as well as two members of the security forces, while 22 people were wounded. Emily Yap for VOA News in Gambassam.
An Africa expert says the attack on Ivory Coast should be viewed as an attempt by Al-Qaeda to undermine the country's emerging political stability and economic growth. J. Peter Pham, director of the Africa Center at the U.S.-based Atlantic Council, says it would be a tragedy if all the progress that Ivory Coast has made over the last 4 years is derailed by Al-Qaeda. He says the United States and Ivory Coast, former colonial power France, should do everything they can to come to the assistance of those African countries that are trying to help themselves, because the Al-Qaeda attacks are not just a threat to Africa, but to the international community as a whole.
The attack certainly is horrific and to be condemned. You know, it shows both the brutality of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and its allies and how ruthless they are, mowing down innocent people who are just trying to escape the heat of Abidjan for a weekend on the beach. On the other hand, this is an attack that is surprising in where it occurred. It's not surprising in the sense that we have worried ever since the French intervention in Mali in 2003, there's been concern that Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and allies, that these groups were seeking specifically to attack stable countries beyond the Sahel to show their reach and to stretch scarce resources for security even further.
You mentioned stable countries. Could it also be that Al-Qaeda is capitalizing on, say, countries that seem to be having some political instability?
Well, Al-Qaeda feeds on any opportunity it has. But I think, actually, the reasons for attacking Côte d'Ivoire are entirely different. What we have in Côte d'Ivoire actually is actually a country that is performing quite well. If one looks at the fact that the country went from the last months of Laurent Gbagbo's regime when it defaulted on its international bonds to its position now, just four short years later, where the country is experiencing one of the highest economic growth rate in the world. And President Ouattara was trounced the opposition this past year in October, winning a second term in office with more than 83% of the vote. So I think it's actually the stability, the democracy, and the economic growth that Al-Qaeda is seeking to undermine rather than necessarily exploiting tensions.
Mr. Fang, do you think African countries, African leaders are up to this challenge, the new challenge to security on the continent? On the one hand, when you hear the African Union say, for example, that Africa can take care of its own business, do you think the African countries are up to the challenge, this new challenge?
Well, I would say that you cannot speak about African countries in the generic sense. One has to look at each of the 54 African states individually, and they each have different capabilities and different challenges.
What do you think the United States and, say, a country like France that has most of its former colonies, in Africa, is there something here that the United States or France can do?
Well, I think the U.S., France, and other countries in the international community should certainly come to the assistance of those countries, especially those countries that are doing what they can. I mean, it would be a tragedy if the progress in Côte d'Ivoire of the last 4 years were damaged by an attack. And unfortunately, you know, that tends to happen. Markets react in a panic, not rationally. So it would be a tragedy if investment dried up, if the government had to divert funding from infrastructure and rebuilding to security.
J.P. DeFarm is director of the Africa Center at the U.S.-based Atlantic Council, an international affairs think tank. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, the United States has condemned in the strongest terms Sunday's terrorist attack in Grand Bassam, Côte d'Ivoire. A spokesman for the National Security Council says the United States stands with the Ivorian people and will remain a steadfast partner to the government and Côte d'Ivoire as it continues making extraordinary progress strengthening its governing and economic institutions. Cameroon says its hospitals on the northern border with Nigeria are overwhelmed by severely wounded victims of the Boko Haram insurgency. The area suffers acute shortages of hospital staff, medical equipment, and infrastructure. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Mora in northern Cameroon.
16-year-old Gwendoline Amike has been given pain-relieving drugs at the Cameroonian District Hospital of Mora, some 20 kilometers from the border with Nigeria. She says she was rushed to the hospital by the Cameroon and Nigerian military after they organized raids against Boko Haram fighters in her Nigerian town of Goshe in February.
We're in school when we heard shooting from all angles, even planes flying were shooting, and we're so confused. I don't even know how I found myself here.
Regional forces from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Benin have been launching raids on Boko Haram strongholds along the border since last December. The raids, suicide bombings, and landmines planted by the insurgents have increased the number of victims. Hannah Lechandre, a French-born volunteer with the Cameroon Medical Council, says the Mora District Hospital, with a capacity of 50 beds, now hosts 350 victims from Cameroon and Nigeria.
Actually, their health status and their mental status is very worrying. So all these people, families, women, children, have been hiding so long in the bush, eating nothing and drinking dirty water. So they arrive in Cameroon in very, very bad situation in terms of health.
Cameroon's health minister, André Mamafuda, says five hospitals on the border with Nigeria are overcrowded with more than 1,700 victims being taken care of by only about 400 staff members. The hospital's capacity is barely 350. He says they lack equipment and infrastructure to cope with the growing numbers, and the hospitals are running short of supplies despite international efforts to assist.
Je suis venu ici pour apporter le réconfort et les encouragements.
He says he has come to comfort and encourage both victims of war and medical staff, helping them, and to assure them the president and government of Cameroon are aware of their difficulties and they are working towards resolving them. Cameroon says more than 1,500 victims of Boko Haram atrocities died in hospitals on its northern border with Nigeria between January 2015 and March of this year. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
Today's Monday, March 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Residents of Yambio, the capital of the new state of Boudou in South Sudan, say they are concerned about arbitrary arrests and disappearances of area youth. But the state's governor denies the army is arresting young people. Notwithstanding, he says state authorities are investigating the alleged youth disappearances. Gift Friday of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
Residents say just 2 days ago, two more youths were arrested from Yambio Market and taken to an unknown location by unidentified gunmen. An eyewitness who requested to be identified only as Richard for fear of government reprisal says six armed men arrested the boys. Speaking in the local Zande language, Richard says those the gunmen were wearing military uniforms. Richard says what he saw yesterday at Daga Market was that there were two boys arrested, and those who arrested them accused them of being rebels. Richard says he does not know where the uniformed men took the boys. In another incident, the head of a Yambia-based human rights organization, Ahmed Bashir, says an armed man who claimed to be a security operative attempted to arrest him in Yambio town on Monday.
He told me his boss sent him to arrest me. He was stating to me these things when his gun was cocked and the gun was ready to shoot. He ordered me to sit down and he ordered me to hand over anything that I have, phone and everything, my camera in my pocket. In due process, I managed to escape and he started running. Seriously, I shouted, then I escaped.
Bashir says that on Tuesday, a woman at the International Women's Day event in Yambio's Masia area harassed him and confiscated his camera, but later returned it after he reported the incident to the police. Bashir says human rights violations are rampant in the area because Human Rights Commission officials are nowhere to be found.
And the absence of South Sudan Human Rights Commission in the state is also a threat. And that means the people of Western Equatoria remains vulnerable to anything because there is nobody to monitor the situation of human rights in Western Equatoria.
The mayor of Yambio Municipality, Daniel Badagu, says he is aware of Bashir's harassment report.
We have already asked our security organizations to actually try to face that. And he has to report that to the police so that we can have a file for the case. Then we're going to follow it up with the concerned authority within the market and see exactly how the situation happened.
Badagu says Yambio is relatively calm and urged the hundreds of people who fled the area at the height of violence to return to their homes. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Washington, D.C.'s newest Smithsonian Museum is set to open to the public on September 24th this year. It will be the first national museum devoted exclusively to African-American history and culture. For the last 8 years, a major campaign has been underway to find and collect artifacts, documents, and other items that will make up the museum's permanent collection. Viewer's Chris Simpkins has more on this story.
Not far from Washington, the Smithsonian Institution is collecting artifacts that will tell the 400-year story of African Americans. Lonnie Bunch is director of the National Museum of African American History.
We have started with zero objects. We've now collected nearly 25,000 artifacts from all over the country.
Ground was broken for the museum in 2012. Now workers are putting the final touches on the building that sits on the National Mall. Meanwhile, Michelle Gates Morrissey and other curators have assembled artifacts that reflect periods of African American history.
The unique thing that we can do at the Smithsonian is present them with those real artifacts and make history real.
The museum acquired almost 40 items belonging to Harriet Tubman. In the mid-1800s, she helped hundreds of African-American slaves reach freedom in the North through the secret route known as the Underground Railroad. The museum also received a shawl that was given to Tubman.
The shawl that was given to her by Queen Victoria, who had invited her to come to the Queen's Jubilee, which she had declined, but she had given her the shawl as a recognition of who she was and what she had accomplished.
These slave shackles make the horrors of slavery real. Bunch says painful chapters of history must be told.
We hope that we will tell a story that on the one hand will make you angry about what happened to people, but on the other hand, it'll inspire you about the ability of America to perfect itself, to right a wrong.
African Americans in film and music will also be a permanent exhibit.
I need you so.
Curator Dawn Reese located items of the late singer and actress Lena Horne.
I'd love to have this for the collection.
Yes.
She was the first black performer to sign with a major Hollywood studio. Reese says the arts have been a path out of oppression for many African Americans.
Particularly in the arts and entertainment and sports, it's been that agency to kind of get out of poverty or circumstances and make your way in the world.
This isn't a single African American story, but it's a story that that touches us all and that allows people, regardless of race, to see that they too are shaped by the African American experience.
Soon, this museum will give visitors more moments to discover the riches of African American history. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
A new law passed last month makes France the world's first country to ban supermarket waste, forcing large stores to give edible food to charity. The legislation takes a bite out of the roughly 7 million tons of food wasted in France every year, mostly by consumers. But as Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris, it's only the first step.
When it comes to good deals, this Salvation Army store is the place to go. The charity's clients pay only a small so-called social contribution for their groceries. They all live on tight budgets. Single mother of two, Zina Tigrine, lost her job a few months ago.
It's wonderful. It's precious help when you're really in need.
The store's products are donated by local supermarkets.
We get mostly fresh produce, hygiene and personal care products, especially those that aren't selling.
Those donations used to be voluntary. Now a new French law makes it mandatory for large supermarkets to give unsold but still edible food to charities or face a $4,000 fine. It's a first victory for municipal councillor Arash Derambash from the Paris suburb of Courbevoie. After campaigning for France's parliament to pass the supermarket waste law, he now hopes other countries will do the same.
We have got the same crisis all the world.
We have the same crisis all over the world. We have got this possibility to help the poor person with supermarkets. Every night, each supermarket throws away to the garbage 50 kilos of unsold food.
French charities welcome the new law, but some worry they'll end up with more food than they can handle. But everybody agrees that in a country with 9 million people living in poverty, there is no reason to waste food. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. A new look Kenyan team retained all individual and team titles at the Africa Cross Country Championships in Yaounde, Cameroon on Saturday. James Rungaru clocked 26 minutes and 34 seconds to edge Ugandan Philip Kipyeko by a second to win the senior men's 10 kilometers. Kenyan Charles Mnarea placed third. Uganda placed second ahead of Ethiopia in the team standings. Meanwhile, All Africa Games 10,000 meter champion Alice Aprot clocked 29 minutes and 52 seconds to lead Sheila Chepkurui and Beatrice Mutai in a 1-2-3 Kenyan sweep in the women's 10 kilometers. Ethiopia placed second and South Africa placed third in team prizes. Staying in Yaounde, Isaac Kipsang and Ronald Kiprotich secured a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in the junior men's 8 kilometers with the Eritrean Aaron Kifle claiming the bronze medal. Ethiopia are runners-up ahead of South Africa in the team standings. Earlier on, Mariam Cherop, Gloria Kite and Winifred Mbithi clinched a 1-2-3 Kenyan dominance in the junior women's 6 kilometers. Ethiopia were second in the team honors, while Morocco were placed third. In Italy, Morocco held Africa's flag high at the World University Cross Country Championships in Cassino, some 140 kilometers southeast of the Italian capital Rome on Saturday. Hicham Amgar, Rida Jafar, Youssef Ben Haji and Mohamed Agouram secured a 1-2-3-4 Moroccan triumph in the men's race. Morocco comfortably won the team event, while Algeria placed fifth among 12 teams. In contrast, Algeria's Siham Ait Athaman was 19th and the best-placed African in the women's race. Morocco placed sixth and Algeria seventh among 9 teams. Turning to football, Nigeria, Ghana and Cameroon triumphed in the opening leg of the second round of the Africa FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup qualifiers on Saturday. Rashidat Ajibade scored 4 goals and Yetunde Fajobi added 2 more in the first half to secure Nigeria's emphatic 6-0 triumph over their visiting South African peers in Abuja. Elsewhere, Ghana upstaged their hosts Morocco 4-0 in Marrakech as Cameroon used home advantage to edge Egypt 2-1 in Yaounde. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, March 14th.
This is Bapa Adama Refota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. The suspension of some high-ranking officers from the Central Bank of Nigeria is clearly indicating that Nigerian economy is in the hands of mediocres. Very unfortunate and disheartening. Thank you. This is Bapa Adama Refota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Monday, March 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you a very productive week.
You asked for it, and we're delivering more sports.
I love sunny side sports.
Starting March 21st, the sunny side of sports is expanding to half an hour. Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Tune in starting Monday, March 21st, right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk. Lost love. Do you still remember your first love? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing lost love. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.